I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This podcast is supported in part by the Bertha Foundation.
Hello, Lewis. How are you?
Daniel, I'm well. How the hell are you?
I'm really good. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling tired, but I'm good otherwise. I'm tired because, bit of personal news, today I mailed the last ever JokeKeeper billboard sticker pack out.
Hey!
480 sticker packs have been mailed out to people who paid $100 to get them. But as a result, Lewis, I've actually got quite a few stickers left over. I thought I under-ordered, so I did an extra order, and then I end up with about 100 more stickers per sticker that I actually ordered. So if you want a pack of these $150 valued sticker packs, hang around at the end of the podcast and I'll tell you how to get them at a massive discount.
Wow.
Lewis, I haven't even sent you these.
No, I've got, what have I got? I've got these Irrational Fear QR codes.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
They're not in functioning anymore, obviously, but all QR codes are done now.
If you scan that, that actually exports your entire browser data to Twitter. everyone can see everything you've ever downloaded. It's great.
Oh, great.
The billboard stuff is continuing. I've spent the last bit of money on some billboards around Cook, which is Scott Morrison's seat. So I've got a few bit of artwork going. I'm going to show you some of the artwork now. This is a classic. Let's have a look here. Yes, Hawaiian Hideaway for when things get too hot at home, bushfire sale now on, that's going up. Mm-hmm. Then we've got this one. Visit the old growth stumps of Tasmania. It's just a beautiful bit of artwork in a classic 1960s US national parks kind of style.
Who did that art? That's beautiful.
Her name is Tanya. She's from Tasmania. She's a Tasmanian artist. She actually did a cracking job on this, like so good. Like it's beautiful. Mm. Someone gave a huge donation to JokeKeeper and they wanted one particularly around the jobs of the future. So I've designed this one to go up, which is, in 2035, Cassie will be qualified to put former politicians in jail for historical climate crimes. And it's got this picture of this cute little girl in a graduation outfit, and it says, climate prosecutor is one of the 1 million new Australian jobs for in a fossil fuel-free future.
Yeah, well, she looks about six, which is probably Scott Morrison's kind of child slavery plans stay on track. She could just hop straight into the court right now.
And we're going to be talking a little bit about that a little later on. Right now, I'm recording my end of Irrational Fear on Gadigal land in the Eora Nation. Sovereignty was never ceded. We need a treaty. Let's start the show.
Irrational Fear contains naughty words like Brexit, Canberra, fair gum, and Section 40. Irrational Fear recommends listening by immature audiences.
Tonight, Victoria Health calls a code brown on Scott Morrison's press conferences. And the Prime Minister asks the states to let kids drive forklifts in order to give George Christensen something to do. And Joss Whedon turns out to be an even bigger shit than Justice League. It's the 21st of January 2022, and there's a high-pressure system of breakfast television asking, should we change the date of Australia Day that could last all week? This is...
Irrational Fear!
Welcome to Rational Fear. I'm your host, former chairman of Credit Suisse, Dan Illich. And this is the podcast that vaccinates your brain once a week to make you impervious to scary news stories for at least 7 days. Let's meet our fearmongers for tonight. First, did you know that Australian TV comedy shows have a diversity problem? 90% of the head writers are straight white men, and 90% of those are James Colley. From 81% of the comedy shows that are on TV, it's James Colley.
Hello, Dan. I'll always be from Irrational Fear. This is why I have made a push to be the official prodigal son of Irrational Fear.
As you've got it in the name tonight. Thank you, James. I do appreciate that. And when she's not being an ARIA award-winning musical comedian, she's busy being an ARIA award-winning data point on Facebook. It's the ARIA award-winning Bridie Connell.
Thank you for using my full title. Hello.
Now, there's a little bit of a delay, but I assume that's because you're beaming to us from New Zealand, the place where there is no COVID, where you can go to the shops and, you know, see your friends and put on comedy shows.
Unfortunately, no COVID, but also no friends. So real tough spot that I'm in here. Just kidding. I'm actually very popular, so I'm doing fine.
Bridie, how long have you been there? I feel like your accent's gotten stronger since I saw you last.
As soon as I have, like, one conversation with my dad, it comes back fairly quickly, to be
and
honest.
I have to say, I've been listening to your podcast with James Colley, and listening back to it, I'm like, hang on a second, Bridie Connell all of a sudden sounds like she's from New Zealand.
My true identity has finally been revealed.
We're pushing for a lot of international funding.
Yeah, Anzac code switching. It's very impressive.
Very good.
Thank
very
you
good.
So much.
And it's a man so tall that HR is required to hire a forklift to have a face-to-face conversation with him. It's Lewis Hopper.
Yes, Dan, I can finally get those six-year-olds on the end of a fork and raise them up to my level.
Here is a message from this week's sponsor.
Triple J is Lotus 100.
Hey, Veronica Milsom here to remind you that you've only got 2 days left to submit your favourite years for the Hottest 100. Now, with over 2,000 years to choose from, we want to know which year you think will come out on top as the hottest year ever.
Yeah, I thought 1989 was pretty hot.
No, it's not when you were last hot. The temperature of Earth.
Oh, gosh, it's got to be 2007. That's the year I was born and my mum was in labour for like 4 hours and that was hot.
Yeah, okay, I can understand from a friction perspective, but once again... we're talking about the Earth's temperature.
Did you know the hottest year was actually 1890 and the Earth's been getting colder every year since?
I'm sorry, is this Senator Malcolm Roberts?
No, it's Senator Malcolm Roberts. He's from the ABC.
Get ready for the most predictable countdown most of the world is ignoring. The hottest 100 years ever. Spoiler alert, it was last year. It's always the last year.
Always good to have friends of the show on. Veronica Milsom there. Are you excited, Lewis, for Hottest 100 week for you? I mean, it's like busiest. It's like Christmas for Triple J presenters.
It is, yeah. It's really busy. Obviously, it's always nice for Christmas not to be riddled with disease. usually the most fun part of the Hottest 100 are people having parties. And really the only parties people are having now are people who are triple vax trying to deliberately get COVID so that they have the extra immunity. So it is a bit of a somber affair, but, you know, I'm sure there'll still be plenty of people who listen to Hottest 100 who will be getting absolutely shit-faced with 1,000 people and it will make me very nervous.
Yeah, get shit-faced on Twitch. That's the aim of the game. This week's First Fear, on Thursday, Scott Morrison, which should be pointed out despite everything, is still Prime Minister of Australia, floated the idea that 16-year-old children should be able to operate forklifts as a way to solve some of the supply chain problems that Australia's facing due to adults being sick from COVID-19. But no sooner had Scott Morrison raised the idea by the afternoon, it was lowered again by some adults in the National Cabinet. Fearmongers, is this a good idea, letting 16-year-olds drive something that, according to the unions, causes one in six workplace deaths? Bridie?
Well, look, it was not the news I was expecting today. Like, I knew that the Liberal Party is big on, like, old-fashioned conservative values. I just didn't know that, like, child labour was one of them. I kind of feel excited for them because if this is a value, like, with the current climate the way it is, there's not a lot of chimneys and therefore not a lot of chimney sweeps. So I'm like, this is cute. Maybe this will lead to our first, like, little Mary Poppins moment. We can have an adorable chorus line of, like, kids on forklifts. I think the choreographic opportunities with this news are huge. So I'm all for it.
The premier that would be most up for it would surely be Dominic Perrottet. I mean, he's got seven forklift drivers ready to go.
A whole fleet.
This is exactly how Tiny Tim got his crutch too. So we're building up for next Christmas.
Yeah, this does feel like a bunch of schools are going to be really excitedly doing modern adaptations of Oliver.
I actually really like this plan. I know this is controversial, but I really like this for two reasons. One of which is I have an 8-week-old and babies are expensive, so get a job. Honestly, I spent $100 at Big W today. Do you know how hard it is to spend? Do you know how many, like,
$100
muscle shirts made by other children I would have to buy to make up $100 at Big W on my own?
I was going to say, if you're buying $100 worth of merch, you need a forklift to get that $100 worth of stuff to the car.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Get a job. Stop living off my dime. And also, more importantly, because I have an 8-year-old, I've been stuck inside for about 8 weeks and I need more TikTok content. So, yes, give every 16-year-old a forklift. Let's get this thing humming.
Like, I have a 3-year-old nephew and he loves trucks. Like, yeah, he would be so keen for this. If I told him that he could drive a forklift, he would do it for free. He can't technically hold a fork yet, but I reckon he's about ready.
But this is what I'm worried about, Lewis, because 3-year-olds love trucks, but it makes this whole policy makes me think that they came up with it, the government, while playing with Tonka trucks, like, ooh, fun, let's do this, which would explain why they like coal mining so much. But I'm like, no, let's not be playing with Tonka trucks. Let's be consulting with experts and reading official documents, please.
Yeah, their next plan is going to be like, we're going to build a bunch of commuter car parks and we've found there's some really good infrastructure material. It's called Lego and we think it's going to really go well.
It's remarkable to me that what we've learned over the last couple of years is that the global supply chain can be stopped by a boat that gets very stuck when it absolutely should not be stuck, or just not enough teenagers to operate heavy machinery. How fragile is this thing?
You know, one of the most concerning parts of this news story to me, apart from the child labour laws and the death and all the, you know, all the, yeah, is that I just had a flashback to when I was 16 and I told a boy at school that I could drive a forklift because I thought it would impress him, which it did.
Still does.
But it was a lie.
But how's he going to prove it? He's like, oh my God, that's crazy. I've got a forklift at home. No one can drive it. Get over here, Brady.
Yeah, she gave me a PJ, a pallet jack.
I did love the best pun on Twitter I saw with this was a university professor saying the whole idea was unpalatable. And I was like, yes, well done. Well done. I'll pay that. I'll pay that pun. I enjoyed that.
How do we make that person do physical labour?
I do think it would stimulate the economy in a lot of ways. Like, I think not only is it just good to get kids into highly, highly dangerous trades as soon as possible, but I think there are a lot of offshoots that we haven't considered yet. Like, you got to think that Dare Ice Coffee will be bringing stuff out in kid size. Kid size pack of Winnie Blues, they're going to start flying off the shelves. Like, this is going to stimulate the economy from the ground up.
Crown would have to change their jingle. There is nothing like Crown from picking them up and putting them down after a snack. you know, to have a, you know, have a sleep. That would be.
Yeah, put them down for a little nap.
Yeah.
I actually worked at like 15 and 16. I worked in the back docks of a Toys R Us. And can I say, it was already horribly, horribly mismanaged. It was, our system at the time was, you climb up on the racks and someone will throw the scooters up to you and you try and catch them. I would say the last thing we need.
You should have at least got some of those long-handled grabbers that you could reach down.
I like the reaction on Twitter to some of this. A lot of folks are saying this is a bit of a distraction from everything that's going on in terms of... Dr. Vyon Sharma said this. He said, some days you drop the dead cat, other days you are the dead cat. And I think that's a really beautiful summation of that.
I don't know if, like, I worry that I don't know if you can still be calling this distractions, because, like, it's like if Sideshow Bob gets up to the 14th rake and you're saying, well, that's just distracting from the first 13 rakes. Like, at some point, you're just tremendously shit at what it is you're supposed to be doing and you keep fucking up. And the fact that time is linear makes every new event seems like a distraction from the past one.
There is also an element to this, because it's like, oh, we've run out of rat tests. Why have we run out of rats? Oh, we've run out of rats because we don't have enough forklift drivers. Okay, the forklift drivers will be 16. Oh no, wait, that's going to call it. It's, to me, this feels like bringing in the cane toads.
Yeah, right.
It's like, I've come up with a solution and that solution ends up being far worse than the original problem.
We are running out of 16-year-olds to operate the forklifts, but we are also cancelling sex ed to create more teen pregnancy so we can get more 16-year-olds as soon as possible.
Yes, that's the kind of thinking we love.
And I love this from Mark Humphreys on Twitter when he wrote, at this point, we're going to learn that the government hasn't ordered enough forklifts.
It's like 10,000 spoons and all you need is a forklift.
Can you imagine how great it would be, though, to rock up to your year 10 formal in a forklift, two boys on each fork? You'll be a king of the school.
Of course I can imagine it. That's why I told that stupid lie in 2007, James.
Irrational fear.
We have been working to reduce the regulatory requirements. There are changes that we need to make around the age of forklift drivers, to get quite specific.
Your fear is rational.
This week's second fear, Boris Johnson is on the ropes again. Ever since Boris Johnson took over the office of Prime Minister from Theresa May, we've read for about 3 years that his time as Prime Minister will be over. But because of this whole debacle around the Christmas party in Downing Street, it could possibly be over. I mean, Labour leader Keir Starmer had very strong words about Boris Johnson. He said he broke the law and he lied. But if that happened in Australia, you'd be gifted a portfolio with more responsibility. James, is his whole career over? What do you think?
Well, I don't think his career is over, because this is a man who has made a career out of failing upwards. So they'll take him out of this and he'll end up king somehow. But this does seem like a worry, because they had leaked, part of the story of this was, quote, Operation Save Big Dog, which is the best name I've ever heard for any political communication. Operation Save Big Dog was the plan to find a series of people that he could throw under the bus before him to slow the bus down just enough that he would survive.
It sounds like a GoFundMe for a pet.
No, it sounds like that person in high school who really desperately wants a nickname. So it's like, yeah, everyone's calling me Big Dog now. Yeah, promise they are.
No, Operation Safe Big Dog was when SEAL Team 6 murdered Clifford.
Yeah. I feel like Operation Big Dog sounds like the sequel to Operation Dumbo Drop.
Another timely reference there.
Thank you. 1995. It was a wild time.
I one of my favorite parts of the outrage for this, because it's very funny. So this all started when they had a party as the farewell for the now deputy editor of The Sun, before The Sun broke the story without revealing that it was the deputy editor, which took a little while to come out, because you think he could have mentioned that at the all head.
At the very start.
You know what? Yeah. I know a weird amount about this party because, frankly, it was my party. Yeah. I loved, in the traditional way that any British outrage goes, it eventually comes back to, will this offend the Queen? And in this, their angle is, it was just days before Prince Philip's funeral, which is weird. Like, it was just days before Prince Philip's funeral, and she was harried with grief and busy asking her son, seriously, are you a pedophile? Seriously, though, because it's stacking up. Are you? Are you, though?
Oh, man. Can you imagine Christmas at the Royals this year? It would have been extremely awkward all year round.
Oh, yeah. You know, like you've got Philip's gone, Andrew's in trouble, the Queen is already dead, but they've got big sunglasses on her and no one is allowed to ask any questions.
Yeah, weekend at Lizzie's. That's what's going on there.
Yeah, but she starts drinking at like 9 a.m. And you've always sort of been like, why does she do that? But the more you find out about the family, you're like, oh, fuck yeah. Are you kidding me? I'd be pounding a gin at 9 if I was a pedophile in my family that I'd been hiding for decades.
100%.
Jeez. Oh, so do you think Bojo's going to go, James? Is this the last straw for Bojo?
I think it kind of has to be, but then who's in the bench here? Who wasn't at this party? Like, part of the joy of this was denying the party and then leaking of the press conference you had at the party addressing how inappropriate the party was going to be, the footage of someone bringing drinks into the place, like short of photos of Boris Johnson in a party hat blowing on one of those little I don't know what else they need from this.
It's interesting too because I think if the party was just objectively awesome in Australia, we'd be like, yeah, man, 3 more years. That was a fucking sick party. But just the description of like just platters of sandwiches, it sounds like a terrible time. Like people are just, some of them are in the garden. Like if you're going to lose your job over a party, at least make it a really epic one. That's a real tragedy here.
Yeah, yeah. You want to be doing coke off the treasurer's chest. That's what you want to be doing. Yeah.
You want it to be like the Barbarella Christmas party of 2018.
I am shocked and disgusted that there was cocaine at a media party. Yeah. I am sickened by this and I will never trust
them. This might be a bit inside school for folks who listen to the podcast, but Bumbrella, big trade rag that talks about the media all the time, put out a blog post this week saying, yes, I'm letting people know that there was cocaine at the Christmas party last year and we want to get ahead of the story.
Not even last year, like 4 years ago.
Oh, was it 4 years ago? I thought it was like in December.
No. It was ages ago.
Oh, my God. So honestly
like it's so – it's like saying there were chips at the McDonald's birthday.
Yeah.
Like, it was such an insanely unnecessary post. You're like, what were you afraid of? That like other journalists would go and go like, did you hear that there was like drugs at the Christmas party?
They're busy snorting up at the Walkley.
Yeah, I got off for drugs at the 2006 Logies. Maybe I should talk to somebody at Channel 10.
Yeah, I think the real problem with this is there's still a media organisation that can afford cocaine.
Irrational fear. More than 800 police officers are in isolation tonight because of critical shortages of rapid antigen tests.
Some police stations have actually been forced to close and some local areas have been left without a local response.
Your fear is rational.
This week's third fear. Craig Kelly is up in Google and Facebook's face this week for removing United Australia Party ads from their platforms. Now, some of the ads that UAP put up were quite sensational. They make outrageous claims that aren't based in truths. You know, stuff like Craig Kelly and Clive Palmer would be good politicians. You know, stuff like that. And please vote for them. You know, stuff that everybody knows isn't true. There's also a bunch of stuff that got taken down that were all COVID conspiracies. Now, out of the 57 ads that have been running on YouTube, only 4 got taken down after they had been running for a week and they'd been seen by millions and millions of people. It seems to be kind of almost pointless to even like why even complain that 4 ads got removed out of 57 and millions of people already seen your ads. But what's interesting is the media is kind of focusing on this moment of the ads being pulled, but right down the bottom of all these articles has like the number has the money kind of spent by UAP on these ads. And I just want to share these numbers with you. Apparently, 90% of all political advertising on YouTube is done by the United Australia Party. The next is done by Labor. Now, the United Australia Party spends $4.9 million on YouTube ads. And guess how much Labor has spent? Lewis, do you know how much Labor would have spent?
50 grand.
It's close, 90 grand. Like, they spent $90,000.
Compared to $4.9 million. Wow.
Isn't that just crazy? And here's the thing. Here's the strange thing. Like, there has been several bits of legislation to stop lying in political advertising go in front of this government for the last 10 years, but everyone in the coalition has voted against it. So it's actually not illegal to lie in political advertising.
That sounds healthy.
You're not even allowed to lie about, like, the shake weight. But you're only lying about fucking policy.
If you say that your spray and wipe kills 100% of germs, they're going to kick down your fucking door. You're like, do you know what? Drink it and it will cure COVID. That's cool.
That's right. James, I forget, you are the head writer of Gruen Transfer, so you would know all of this kind of minutia, right?
Well, these ads are fascinating for us because they're pre-roll ads, and pre-roll ads traditionally, you have 5 seconds to win your audience's attention. And it famously takes Craig Kelly 7 seconds for his mouth to register that his brain is asking him to talk. We are dealing, as we described him on the weekly, we are dealing with the MP most likely to run into a wall with a tunnel painted on top of it. He is truly the stupidest person in Parliament, and that is grading on a curve. Like, it is remarkable that this man is able to upload anything onto YouTube. But these ads go for so long and say so little. They're amazing. But I've got to say, if you're on YouTube and you want to find a Craig Kelly video, the gold standard is when he is in his private home, quarantining for 2 weeks to enter Canberra. So instead, he sets up the red end sign on the fence behind him, which means he is a boat, and he sits there and he bounces a ball against a wall like he's in the Shawshank fucking Redemption.
I think I remember saying that, yeah. But there's just so many other crazy things that he says in his YouTube ads. Like, there is like a Chinese Air Force base in Western Australia, and there's a whole bunch of other kind of conspiracies like this. But they don't get taken down, but the COVID stuff gets taken down because it's kind of against Facebook and Google's policy to not spread misinformation about COVID.
Well, there's a very interesting part of this, which is that, like, they have a three-strike policy. They have a three-strike policy, which is you should be banned for 90 days after your third strike. But Craig Kelly has had, say, 6 of his videos brought down at once, but that counts as one strike because they were all brought down together. So it's like if were like, well, technically I was on a crime spree. So that should only count as one scratch against my record.
And that ties into something that I found funny about this reporting of this story. It's just a little semantic detail, but in a lot of the articles about this, it's like Google says it's doing all it can to take these ads down. And I'm like, are you though? Like, I'm just weighed down by this $4.9 million. Get all this money off me and then I can take them off the internet.
I think it's so interesting, though, that you can actually put out political advertising and you can line it. Like, anyone could publish an ad saying that Scott Morrison is a good bloke who never lies, and you would never go to jail for that. Like, you could even say Barnaby Joyce is a family man who has the interests of farmers at heart, and he couldn't even touch you for defamation. Like, you could spread so many lies with political advertising.
Perhaps some of those products that we mentioned before that want to spread some lies about how effective their sprays are at killing germs should just become a political party and keep their ads the same, and then they'll have no ramification.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think Bridie's really onto something. I would love to see companies turning into political parties to sort of both maybe get elected, but also just sell products. Like, if you were just, imagine seeing a political ad that was just like, vote Windex.
Yeah.
Don't smash the glass ceiling, clean it.
Yeah, I would vote for Crazy John's. I mean, he looks like Craig Kelly. Like, Crazy John's mobile phones could easily run for Parliament. It'd be great.
This is another blisteringly topical reference.
It is a worry to me, though, that, like, even some of the cartoon spokespeople for many products that I can think of, I would prefer to be leading the country. That's a sad time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I worry that the only people who would do it would be Jim's Mowing and Dick Smith.
Irrational fear.
Open society back up. Restore our freedoms. End this madness.
I'm George Christensen, host of Conservative One Pandemic Unmasked, the podcast that's lifting the veil on the Chinese Communist Party created COVID-19.
This is Irrational Fear.
A little while back, I was deleting a bunch of shit from something. I found this old Irrational Fear joke from before Scott Morrison was Prime Minister, years and years before Scott Morrison was Prime Minister. It was a website that, I was about to say we created, Dan created. which was the Scott Morrison excuse generator.
Oh, I remember writing that exact page.
Yeah. And that was, I remember like thinking at the time, I was like, no one knows who this Scott Morrison guy is. I'm not sure this joke's going to fly. But it would, if we kept that up, it would be crushing right now.
Is it still up? Did you find it?
Bring it back.
I don't think it is. I seem to remember, I think the link was broken when I saw it.
Oh, yeah. It was like 2014. All the jokes were incredibly racist.
Out of all the Irrational Fear kind of physical stunts we've done, in the real world stuff, I do enjoy a good website or a good billboard, as you know. But the thing that I loved the most was the phone number, was the who the fuck is Prime Minister phone number, which had the talking clock, which could tell you who was Prime Minister at that exact point in time, because it had a great bit of code that that would connect to the Wikipedia that would automatically change as soon as the Wikipedia entry for Australian Prime Minister was changed. So I remember on election night just calling it, hoping to hear it change over. And then, of course, Scott Morrison won, so it was kind of pointless.
I miss the days where we managed to convince Clive Palmer that we had just found a garbage bag full of the exact number of votes that he was missing.
Yes.
To win election.
Right?
Oh, my God. We should definitely.
The prodigal son.
He's back, baby.
We unfortunately have to postpone our Opera House show, so for our 10-year anniversary. But I tell you what, we should probably do like a definite full retrospective kind of show in the next few months before the election, just to kind of reminisce about all, if not just to be lazy and not write any new jokes, just to replay the old ones.
To play the last 1,000 years of liberal darkness.
I was going to play an old Irrational Fear video with James Colley, but I thought I'd just hold off. I think I'll hold off.
Ooh, now I'm curious.
So am I.
So hang on a second. We'll play.
The suspense.
Yeah, I'm really curious about this.
Oh, boy. Oh,
I mean,
I'm trying to
political
think
comedy is known for aging well.
So Colley came to me ages ago and said, "Oh, can I be an intern on Irrational Fear?" This is when I was like writing Irrational Fear out of my kitchen. And I said,
"Yeah,
sure."
At the time, I think, James, you'd just done a bullshit degree in astrophysics.
Yeah. And then I thought, let's focus on something challenging.
And so I kind of wanted to go to King's Cross and interview people in King's Cross about, this is when King's Cross was like raging and there were so many drunk people in King's Cross, and this is before the lockout laws happened, and the whole premise of it was to ask the people of King's Cross to solve big problems. And looking back at it, it feels so ancient. Like it feels like 1,000 years ago.
So what you need to understand is these people have just come from a Mumbrella after party.
So this is one of the first ever videos we ever made for Irrational Fear. I'm on the microphone interviewing drunk people, and James, you are filming. As we go, why don't we play Hang On A Sec? If anyone wants to stop this as we go, just say Hang On A Sec. Here we go.
Irrational Fear.
So how do we fix King's Cross?
Fix King's Cross?
Cross is full of dickheads. How do you fix that? Well, you can't really. It's the Australian culture. You get drunk, you become a dickhead.
I'll tell you the problem.
Hang on a sec.
The problem is...
They did find a way to fix it. They fucking shut it all down.
Yeah, in retrospect, that was the solution. And housing prices went up.
Everyone's on just drugs. I'm not going to lie, everyone's on drugs. You just got to get peace and love.
Any other suggestions?
Just honestly kick every violent person out of King's Cross.
Just Sam Dark because he's a wombat.
Is there a problem with alcohol in King's Cross?
Nah, man, alcohol problem, I don't believe in it because guess what? I'm alcoholic myself.
So let me ask you a question. How do we fix global warming?
Turn off your heaters. Is the carbon tax got to do with that? Is that about saving carbon or something?
Less mobile phones, cars, all that shit. Go back to old school, just walking and that.
We'll get pyramids out of here, bro.
Even buses, mate. No more buses, nothing.
Continue shuffling.
No. We're not the problem. China and India are the problems. We'll level that shit up.
I think we fixed global warming by stopping the whaling. The whaling is a problem!
Disease.
I don't believe in it. Well, actually, I'll do it because fucking Julia Gillard is a fucking bitch.
I don't believe in global warming.
Why not?
You can't prove it right now. Are we warming up? No, because we're not. I'm pretty fucking cold.
It's cold tonight.
There's no global warming tonight. Nah, if there was global warming, it would be fucking warm. I'll take my shirt off right now.
Take it off.
I'll take it off. Come on.
It's global warming. Everyone's like, it comes in stages.
Hang on a sec. Just because I just need just 2 seconds to not hear these men. Oh, all of these men now, I promise you, have high-profile corporate jobs in Sydney, for sure.
Without a doubt, and they still believe the same thing.
Yeah, they're selling the properties in Potts Point that have gone up 200% because they shut down Fun in the Cross.
I'm pretty sure we interviewed the cast of Sydney Lux Listings. I'm pretty sure that's who we interviewed.
Yeah, those two bled out guys who were like, nah, it's just China and India. You're like, those were the people at COP26 representing Australia.
I'm too fucked, man. What?
Make the ice caps melt. What do you reckon?
What?
Because if frozen ice melts, it cools down the rest of the earth. What do you reckon?
Nah.
Or maybe just get Gillard out of government, maybe? That might help.
That's a big one.
Get Gillard out of government.
Global warming. I don't give a fuck about global warming. We're getting pizzas. You want a pizza?
What about gay marriage? Gay marriage. Personally, it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve.
I'm not against gays, but gay marriage is fucking a bit too fucked up.
How are you going to get a kid out of the guys?
Yeah, how are you going to get a kid out of guys?
Very disappointed in Stuart Lee on the left.
But I'm that big.
Gays have civil unions already, so it's exactly the same rights as gay, or like men and women marriages. Why do they have to have the same as us?
Kind of like black people.
Well, no, not kind of like black people. Because marriage is traditional. You can't go against tradition. That's what I'm saying.
Like slavery.
Not against slavery, no.
Slavery is pretty traditional.
It's traditional, but it's wrong.
Like, gay marriage is cool, man, because everyone says God is like, oh, I made marriage and shit, but God did not make marriage. It's a man-made thing, man. I'm fucked, but
you know what? The world is progressive. You know, 50 years ago, they had no women voting. I'm pretty sure it's a lie. I made that up on the spot. But.
Didn't we look good together?
Now, look at him. Women are voting. Women are marrying. Men are marrying. There's nothing wrong with it.
If two males, if they want to get down to business by a dick and ass, this, that, it's up to them.
Fuck that shit. We're not gay, but fuck you, Gary. Okay.
I'm against it because it's against my religion.
What about if it wasn't your religion?
If it wasn't my religion?
What if you had a different religion?
Well, we wouldn't have a problem with it.
He's actually gay. That's why he's a bit sensitive about it.
Fuck you in the toilet. Just that, all right? Just shut up.
Oh, those are the days. Solid days on Irrational Fear 2012. Woo.
The only thing that I like, that was a brief reprieve from that frankly horrifying couple of minutes of all just spent there was the guy who was like, fuck climate change, let's get pizzas, which I reckon as a policy slogan, I would vote for that party every time.
Sadly, they were coal-fired pizzas.
That is it for Irrational Fear. Big thank you to James Colley, Bridie Connell and Lewis Hobart. Now, James and Bridie, you guys have got a brand new podcast that you want to plug on the show?
We do. Two best friends who decided to start a podcast. We thought it's never been done before.
Yeah, if you enjoy political satire, you're going to love us pouring through the horrible Vanity albums of B-list celebrities in Vanity Project.
Yes, it's a very fun time and there are a surprising amount of Vanity albums out there. So we are having a great old time going through them and it's been really fun so far.
Who have you done so far?
Well, I've been listening to the Paris Hilton episode that you guys did with Beck Shaw, and I have to say, every time you play a song, I simultaneously get annoyed when you cut it off and start talking and kissing, because I'm like, hang on a second, that was actually pretty good. What's going on there? Paris Hilton, she's a superstar waiting to happen.
Truly, it's been my favourite album that we've covered so far.
I can tell you our next album up is Steven Seagal's Songs from the Crystal Cave, and you will not have that feeling.
Wow.
Your like life will flash before your eyes if you listen to this album.
And the name of the podcast is Vanity Project, is it?
Vanity Project, yes.
Yeah. You can listen to it wherever you get podcasts. Big thank you also to Road Mics, the Bertha Foundation, and our Patreon supporters, as well as Jacob Round on the Teppanyaki Timeline. Now, we had a whole stack of people sign up to Patreon from last week, so big thank you to people signing up. Sarah Brennan, Chris Brooks, Elaine Van Bergen, Lucy M, Peter Clayton, Pavel Zelensky, Roz Quirk, Sean McQueen, Abdul Yusuf, and Matt Best. You all are the best. So please, if you like this podcast, please subscribe to patreon.com/irrationalfear. And if you want some Joke Keeper stickers, for the first people to sign up to the $14 a month level, I will send you out a sticker pack with all of the Joke Keeper stickers I can muster. So please do sign up and I'll shoot you out a Joke Keeper sticker pack. I noticed Peter Lawler on the text has already said, free Joke Keeper billboards, count me in. Well, Peter, I've already sent him an envelope. It's on the way, Peter. It's going out to you. It's going out already.
It's going to break the back of your postie.
Not if it's a tiny child in a forklift.
Anything else you want to plug before we go, Lewis?
No, nothing for me, Dan.
I've got some vintage Irrational Fear sticker packs here, so sign up.
James Colley's holding up a poster that says, Tony Abbott, bad Irrational Fear.
I'll take 10.
We zinged him. We zinged him out of office.
Well, that is it. That is it for the show. Big thank you, everyone. We'll see you next time. Until next week, there's always something to be scared of. And you know what? You know, maybe we'll just, rather than do like a long retrospective, we should just play a little bit of something from old days once an episode or something like that. That's fun.
Oh, I think I'd love to be edited out of that.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.